Andrew Hinstridge is Head of Customer Legal at Virgin Money. In his career as a lawyer, Andrew spent years resolving complex problems for others. In August 2024, his own health took a dramatic turn. Rushed to hospital, he was diagnosed with hypertension after his heart enlarged, leading to clots in his body. What he had thought for years were just headaches and fatigue was in fact the manifestation of a serious illness. With the support of trusted leaders at Virgin Money, he was able to return to work with the adjustments he needed to continue to thrive in his career. Today, Andrew epitomises the power of authenticity in his role as sponsor of Virgin Money's Disability Network. Just being yourself is the key to both personal and professional success. Andrew Hinstridge,
hello.
I am so looking forward to our conversation today. Thank you for your time. I wonder if we could start our conversation, which is all about inner confidence and how we navigate our working worlds while living with difference, with your views about why it's so important to talk about inner confidence.
So, about me and my experience, because it probably prefaces all of this. I am new to this game. In 2024, the year started fantastically. I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to take on board some of the burden of being the executive sponsor of our colleague engagement group for people who have disabilities or neurodivergent, and thought I was making great gains in this, enjoying this, being exposed to new experiences and learning. And that was all kind of rattling away quite nicely. And then in August of the year, I mean, I'd had a pattern of declining health, as so many people have, since being locked in my house for 2.5 years between 2020 and now, and sort of thought nothing of these increasing minor ailments and generally feeling unwell. But it came to a head very sharply in August 2024, when one Sunday afternoon I stopped having the ability to move my legs, and at that point panicked and went to my local A&E department, where after a charming 15 hours in a corridor and then eventually being promoted to a trolley in a bay, I ended up spending a period of time in Edinburgh Royal Infirmary's cardiology ward as one of their charges, discovering that a pre-existing condition, a long-term health condition that I've suffered from since my teens, had finally reached a point that it was trying to kill me. And after some skillful treatment from clinicians, this is my big punchline, I'll do it early. I'm a lawyer who has seen pictures of having a normally functioning human heart, which is rather delightful, because it helps very much to have one. The hypertension that I've been suffering from as a teenager had caused clotting on my heart that was causing it to fail, and for good measure had caused all manner of other medical complications, which I'm enjoying the recovery from at the minute. But inner confidence got me through the first night in hospital, and ever since has helped with my recovery. It's helped, I think, make me a better leader. It's helped me face into future career uncertainty in a really positive way. And that's me speaking from a position where I'm sure come on to talk about all of these things, but I started off from a position of exceptional privilege. And every single step of this happened the right way. I'm a very lucky boy. The normal diagnosis for somebody with my lifestyle who suffered this kind of level of medical intervention is being found by a spouse not alive. So the fact that I got treatment and ended up where I am today is means I'm incredibly fortunate. But I started off being told by other people that things were harder for some people and I should be sympathetic and helpful and do what I could. And I have flipped very quickly in advancing middle age to being in that position myself.
Let's go back. I mean, you work for a phenomenal brand, Virgin Money. You're head of customer legal, which you will tell us more about. But that's not plain sailing. So take us back. Let's have a little once upon a time. And if you could share with our listeners, our audience, a bit about your career. You know, had you always wanted to do law? Give us a once upon a time.
Right. So I'm petrified my team will see this and now laugh at my original motivations for being a lawyer. I got taken on a school trip to the courts when I was 9 or 10. Grew up in Edinburgh, you have these opportunities. And at that point, I concluded I wanted to be Lord Chancellor. Now, happily, I was disabused of such a ridiculous notion. But in my teenage years, I was, again, privileged. Start from a high bar and do all of the right things and work hard. It's amazing what you can achieve. It's not like that for everybody, but I'm in the fortunate position it was for me. I didn't care for... I wasn't good at sciences. That was the thing that drove me in the end. And I was good at verbal reasoning and being able to, you know, write in good sentences and use punctuation well. So a career correcting minor grammar mistakes as a lawyer was clearly destined for me. So no great, I didn't watch the contemporary equivalent of Suits and decide that I wanted to be a lawyer. It was as much by accident as by any kind of design. But I obviously attended university, applied for all the jobs that all my friends did at the time. And I ended up working for a large law firm in Edinburgh that subsequently has been, as many of them have, been subsumed by larger international organizations. And did that for, oh goodness, arithmetic, 14, 15 years. And at that point, got the opportunity to join what's now Virgin Money when it was in the process of a complicated demerger from its then owners. Worked for it for several years as an independent as it acquired other organizations, got bigger, and find myself where we are today, which is part of the Nationwide Building Society Group. And it's difficult to sound sincere about these things, but it's genuinely exciting where we are now.
Why?
There's a 3-hour podcast alone in the Modern Mutual Building Society and the opportunities that it offers to customers and colleagues alike, but it's my team's role is all about making sure that our customers' experiences are safe for us and them, that they fundamentally mechanically work and that they aren't going to cause problems in the future for us or our customers if used as they're designed. And to suddenly have the influx of a different way of looking at the consumer banking model and the absence of immediate shareholder demand for return is fantastic. We will be able to build really cool things that work really well for people and make them happy, make their lives easier. So really genuinely exciting time from a career perspective. I'm sort of losing my train of thought here because I was building up to a point. Anyway, yeah, so the team do those things. What is it? Yeah, I think, sorry, I'm now reaching the point where I'm sort of beginning to ramble. But
what do you get out of work? I mean, you've shared with me previously just how much work matters and indeed how hard. I was going to say you were working before pre-24, but you're still working hard. But what is it about work that you get so much from?
So I'll come back to imposter syndrome, but I look at the other amazing participants you've interviewed. I listened to many of them as not preparation, but to understand how I could possibly fill an interesting hour of time. And I have never felt a burning desire to build my own thing, run my own business, be my own, you know, kind of shape my own destiny. I like being involved in teams that do things and build them and create better outcomes for other people. I found a thing that I happen to seem to be okay at doing and that other people believe I am. And I get a lot of value out of that. I enjoy, I mean, this sounds trite when anyone says it, but I enjoy seeing my team develop and get enjoyment from doing that as well. I like when it gets difficult and they want help. I'm not saying needing help. It's when they want help from me and I can not even course correct, but sometimes just offer validation that, yeah, they've made the right decision for the right reasons, and helping them work through problems is immensely rewarding. But yeah, and also it helps support a pleasant lifestyle. That's an element of it as well. I'm not doing it for the love of the game. I'm not some Corinthian thinking that I'm dabbling in this purely for the mere sport of it.
I hear you. So, Andrew, I want to come now to what you did experience in 2024. I mean, did you have any warnings? You've shared with me that there was some things you could have done differently, better with in terms of your health and lifestyle. Can you share around that?
I absolutely can. For context, I mean, the camera possibly adds several pounds to my appearance, but living as I did and the medical conditions that I was suffering from added a great many more. So I shared with you an anecdote when we were speaking before and it was actually representative of the lifestyle I used to lead. My last experience of being in the building we're sitting in now was as a young lawyer in a meeting that went on for 72 hours. And that was not the norm, but again, not infrequent. Long hours were common. Incredible demands on time and delivery. Oh yeah, the sort of fancy way of using too many words to say, like, it was common to have competing deadlines all of the time. So an incredibly high stress environment. There were different ways to cope with that. And the easiest way was to not live the kind of lifestyle that people should. And I think I was very guilty of living until my middle 40s like I was 19. And I've had an extremely sharp course correction in the last
And what does that mean, if I may be so bold?
Yeah, yeah.
Eating too much, drinking too much, or not looking after yourself, not doing sports.
A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything, yeah.
Curiously, one of the symptoms that... one of the medical challenges I experienced was slow recovery times from sporting activity. Like, I couldn't wrap my head around why all my friends at school would get fit or recover from training so quickly. And I now recognize that I wasn't well, and that's why it was taking me longer to recover. That carried through into adult life. So I still managed to create some kind of exercise balance, but it wasn't nearly enough. But it was the convenience of the immediately available. So I would live on ready meals and takeaways rather than actually planning and understanding how to live healthily. And the last 7 months now have been 7 months. Goodness, I'm bad at sums. Anyway, the last period has been a fast re-education. I can now do exceptional mental arithmetic when it comes to calorie counting, but I'm afraid I can't do it when it comes to months, it would seem.
So tell us about the immediate impact. It was quite significant, wasn't it? In terms of your mobility.
I mean, shared experience for many will be that care is difficult to access in the United Kingdom, but when it is available, it is routinely of an outstanding quality. I'm lucky that my diagnosis is one that could be arrived at. I'm lucky, frankly, that I happen to live in a city that has an outstanding teaching hospital with a surplus of doctors wanting to work in it. So the cards fell in that way. Back to the question. Typical lawyer. I'm answering a question I wanted to be asked rather than what I was actually asked.
So your heart was failing?
Hard to describe and actually almost upsetting to describe, but my heart had reached a point where it was distending in shape and was about to go pop, which is now, again, I can't emphasize enough, completely normal. I have returned to having a normally functioning human heart. But No, what that meant, a week and a bit of inpatient care and then extended recuperation, out of work completely. If I haven't mentioned this enough already, I'm going to keep mentioning it. The support of a fantastic boss and team around me who made sure not just that they weren't disturbing me, but that nobody else in an organization was disturbing me whilst I was recuperating. I got peace and time to recover. The bit that still hasn't come back as I kind of walk half hop around London is I still don't have the full use of my legs back because of, without my amateur lessons in cardiology, the clot that was on my part that was causing the problems broke up and bits of it are still settled in my legs. So I am yet to regain full mobility. I hope I will regain full mobility. My doctors are confident I will, but it's going to take a while yet. And if I'm really, really lucky, I might get some vascular surgery time off this year, but I'm confident that that won't happen at the time. So impacts were immediately massive personally, professionally, and this is, I'm happy saying this, professionally inconsequential. I am lucky enough to be in a support environment and work for an employer which, as a body corporate, understands the importance of, frankly, allowing colleagues time to recover, but also immediate personal network within that would rather have me back than have me back ill, I guess. So on one hand, the best holiday I'm ever going to get from work, but equally the most terrifying. And I suppose I've not talked about personal. I've also have an incredible personal support network at home. I'm fortunate enough to have a very, very understanding and patient wife who suspended her entire life for about 10 days to get through the worst of this, and has then put elements of her life on hold for months to support me through it. I'm lucky enough still to have both my parents, and they've done the same. Some element of told you so from them, but only a little bit. Sorry if you're watching, by the way. Long story short, I have come through this in an incredibly fortunate way. And now, frankly, it's time to pay back by being a better ally as a consequence.
Andrew, we are very proud that Virgin Money are members of Purple Space. We have the privilege of watching what 175 brands now across 52 countries continue to get better and go further and go faster about improving the lived experience of people with disabilities. And Virgin Money is no exception to that. You do some fantastic things. But I want to dig into the kind of who did what when around you when you were coming back to work.
Right. And,
you know, what were the actual behaviours of those around you in a kind of crunchy way that helped you to be who you are and to maybe ask for the adjustments that you might need?
Yeah, I mean, so my experience was everything someone should experience. And I am not naive enough to believe that that's what everyone will experience. I hope it's what everyone experiences in my organization. I trust it is. And I will keep being difficult and argumentative to make sure that it is. But I suppose granular level, again, lucky. Reasonable adjustments involve. So, point in time, I'm also incredibly fortunate. We maintain, I was about to say, a flexible attitude to work, very much the wrong thing to say, an approach to flexible working that allowed me not to travel for work. I could set myself up at home and the team around me working similarly, the people we are working around also working similarly, meant that it was possible with reduced mobility to work the way I did. A phased return to work was mercifully brief. I didn't have to spend time adjusting. I need to stop saying I was lucky, but I was fortunate that I was able to just not come back as normal, but to a very adjusted normal and contribute as I had previously. What else, I suppose, has happened?
So is it just people around you just accepting that and allowing you to work in a way that you needed to work?
Team were accepting. I was amazed by the support I received from quarters I didn't expect it from. I've worked for the organization for 10 years. I have colleagues all across the organization, all levels, who I've spent the last 5 years staring at their spare bedroom wall. I've spent more time with them in that environment than I have with literally anybody else. We spent years not seeing close friends and family. And in that period, the kind of bonds that you created with people were genuinely, I think, quite remarkable. And some of the support I've had from the support from those people wasn't surprising. It was from the people that I had sent an email to 2 years ago, who came out of the woodwork and expressed their, I guess, alarm at the story, but took a lot from it. The feedback from the, I mean, we did a session, November last year, and the feedback from it blew me away at a level, but the kind of outpouring of support there was. And that wasn't a universal reaction. There's still, I think, I've outed myself as having a long-term health condition. I'm not walking like I used to. I'm a materially different shape than I used to be. And all of those things are noticeable and people remark on them. But I've had nothing but support from a colleague network. It actually pretty stark. It's not something I reflected on previously. It's a nice place to work. People are generally quite nice to one another. So when people are nice to one, it's not surprising, but actually it is fairly,
It's really powerful to hear, because, you know, we take very seriously our duty of care to our members, and working with great colleague networks like the one at Virgin Money, who do a lot of work to support people to build their inner confidence. But of course, these films, these podcasts, which are open source, are helping individuals who may be less close to the jobs market than they would like to notice that it's not all bad. You know, if we watch the news, it's all doom and gloom, and it's all about welfare reform and poverty. And I'm not suggesting those truths don't exist, Andrew, but it is a balanced message of hope and optimism and talent. But I'm intrigued to hear a bit about your story of inner confidence, because, you know, as a lawyer, you will have to eyeball interesting individuals from time to time to push your point across. So I don't suppose you've ever not had inner confidence. But what was it about the experience that maybe rocked your world or brought uncertainty?
I suppose I've told a story of privilege coming from a position where I started in life with confidence that actually probably got to a level that was unhealthy in my 20s, that I thought I was invincible. With age came a degree of reflection, a sort of moderation that we all experience, where you start to become a little bit more uncertain. But it all comes to head one evening in August last year, where I went from, I'd sat working in the afternoon, you know, thinking that it was all getting ahead of the game, being nice and organized so that I would start the week on a positive note, and spent that night wondering about where my bank statements were and whether my wife would be able to find them in an organized way. And that reset progressed. The next evening I lay awake, I mean, completely with absolutely no basis in fact, spent the evening, the second night in hospital, worrying about whether I would ever be able to go back to work as a consequence of this, because not being able to cope in a high stress environment is basically completely incompatible with my role. And then, you know, after a week, this is my first experience with healthcare. I've had the occasional, you know, was born, had the occasional broken bone as a child, and then in my 40s ended up in hospital and not far off in life support. And week two, when it didn't start, my legs didn't start to heal, I started wondering, will I ever actually be able to walk again? And happily, that happened fairly quickly. I didn't need to dwell on that, but each step in that journey confidence that I'd built over years by professional knowledge and experience that meant that I was basically confident in any environment got reduced to nil. And I just had to remember that I could do things and that I shouldn't be. Things had changed, but actually by recognizing what had changed and what I could do to positively impact the difficulties that were going to be in my way has helped me rebuild that. Obviously talking about myself for a period of time has me completely terrified, but that's a side issue rather than...
Why is that?
I don't know. I've spent my entire life dealing with other people's complicated problems. And when it comes to talking about my own challenges and overcoming them, it starts to get really, really difficult. That reflection's hard, but actually forcing myself to think about, well, sharing what I can remember about the journey I have been on, I think is incredibly valuable. Like, people will be able to get things out of this. Anyway, remembering, I guess, understanding what I've experienced, what it's going to mean, what I'm going to need to change, and then following through on it and creating structures around it have helped build confidence that everything's going to be okay, and equally has helped with the process of it being okay. And then the other step in that confidence journey was sitting with you in front of hundreds of my colleagues and, you know, potentially an audience of all of our 7,000 or so staff that were at the time. Sharing some fairly stark truths about myself was pretty powerful. I think you'll never find out how many people are on blood thinners until you tell them you are. And then everyone will come and tell you that they are. So it's also been an outlet for other colleagues to talk to me about their health issues, their challenges, their experiences as carers, their experiences, their worries with children with disabilities. So it has made me more confident as an ally as well. The authenticity of actually not being, society needs a better word than normal. I used to think I was normal. I still am normal. It's just I have to adjust to a very different version of normal.
I hear you, Andrew. In terms of just following that through, where do you hope, I suppose, your leadership style has changed or morphed as a consequence? And a supplementary to that, and how will that impact further the work of the network?
So, I would struggle to find my style as a leader. I'm hopefully none of the kind of comic tropes that exist around it, but I mentioned imposter syndrome in passing before. I've never had a job where I didn't feel like an imposter. And I think that's actually a fundamentally healthy sign to a limited degree, that there is an element where self-doubt that you're doing it wrong helps you be better at it. And I've seen great leaders, I've seen bad leaders. I like to borrow from the great and do the polar opposite of the poor sometimes. But anyway, sorry, bring it back to the question. I've learned in the last short period that I've spent my entire adult life slightly behind the start line in a race that everyone's running. And with diagnosis, which I'm fortunate enough to have had.
What do you mean by that?
So life was very slightly harder for me for an extended period of time. Minor medical ailments became more material than they should. Suffering from unexplainable headaches, being tired when I shouldn't be, things like that. And the medical interventions I've had mean that that's not happening anymore. But the recognition that I have been living with a hidden disability for my adult life, that I wouldn't be supposed to say cured, but the impacts of which are significantly mitigated, has helped me understand a thing that I was always too bullish and confident to properly recognize before. Life is hard for absolutely everybody. It's harder to varying degrees for some people. And the answer to getting the most out of a team is to recognize both those truths and understand and be empathetic with the problems that people are suffering, none of them are the same. There's no magic. I mean, if I had the airport book of what the solution is to this problem, I would be coining it in sales. But the answer is to listen and understand and build a degree of trust with either people who report to you or people who you work with closely, so that they recognize that at their worst, you're going to have their back. And I think I might have been okay at that previously. I was certainly far from perfect, and I'm still far from perfect, but it's helped me better have an eye for it and be significantly more patient when things go wrong, as they sort of do if you do what I do for a living.
Yeah, we hear you. Andrew, one of the things that we're doing is building a suite of resources and collateral and assets to help not just our members, but more broadly, individuals build their inner confidence. Yeah. And of course, this film series is part of our Confident Conversation series. And I know you've looked at our guides, and you know we talk about the hurdles and the fundamentals. Which of those had resonance for you?
Well, they're fundamental, so they all resonated. I think actualization, understanding the problem, taking ownership of it, recognizing that everybody wants to help, but not everybody's going to be able to help, and there's an element of being selfish, that one needs to recognize the, sorry, not selfish, but should have brought my thesaurus. Yes, there is a degree, a need to be self-centered and understand that if you want to be the best version of yourself, you need to understand how best you can help yourself. Because yes, there is a need for help from others, but there's a recognition that sometimes it's not going to be available, and not for the wrong reasons. People will try to help and will help wrong from time to time. So, that, and as I say, sharing, telling the story to other people helps me as well as helping them. The response, I'm actually increasingly overwhelmed thinking about the level of positive response we've had to these conversations. So
yeah
that
it's powerful,
has helped
isn't
pick
it?
Me up when things have got a little bit difficult.
And in terms of the hurdles, I've heard you talk about sometimes the setbacks. We think life is linear and we'll forever positively learn from this, but it doesn't always work like that, does it?
No, I think I feel personal setbacks more. So in this kind of treatment wellness, in the journey towards wellness, I have had setbacks. I've experienced the classic "I told you something else was wrong" moment before Christmas, when I enjoyed a surprise CT scan finding about something else that was wrong with me. And I think I was wrong to expect that it would be a linear journey, that a doctor was treating me and it would be fine now. That more minor ailments will knock me for six and I'll suddenly feel like the sky's falling in. But I need to keep reminding myself that I've spent, I was about to be coy about how old I am, it's basically pointless. I've spent 25 plus years living with a condition that impeded my ability to function. That's now in treatment, and will be forever. I'll be counting pills for the rest of my days, but the journey to being able to do the things I want to do is going to be bumpy, and I'm just going to need to recognize that and pick myself back up when it goes wrong. And that isn't easy, but reminding myself that even at my worst, I was able, and I am, if anything, more able now than I was previously, then yes, just need that moment of quiet reflection to stop, rethink. And it's very helpful, as I say, to have, I need to mention her as many times as possible, otherwise she'll punch me in the arm. But my wife's an excellent way of reminding me, who will from time to time tell me not to be so silly, and to those, just for those are not the words she uses, but not to be so silly. And that I need to recognize the journey I'm on and that it's difficult.
Yeah. And you're thinking about our shared duty of care to those who have come behind us. And you're right, I have seen, you know, I'm deeply impressed with the way in which you shared your story so eloquently within the business and now very publicly. What do you hope people will draw from it? I think particularly those that are less able to be out and loud and proud, dare I say it, or struggling to even share in the first place, a hidden disability.
I think, when we spoke before, you asked me the question, you were comfortable sharing this at this stage in your career. Yeah, that's because I'm in a position of privilege where, and objectively, I know it's not going to do me any harm. The people I work with are understanding and supportive. They also recognize that, if anything, they're going to get more out of me than they did previously. There is a happy news story here and a win-win, but you asked, would I, at an earlier stage in my career, have done what I did? And there were two considerations in doing it. One, it's sort of difficult to hide when you've lost 3 stone. People are going to notice. So it actually invites more unwelcome questions not doing it. So that was a balancing effort. And the other piece to it was that I thought I would just, you know, get something out of it. But I look back to when I was, you know, if I'd experienced this diagnosis or had this incident when I was in my early 20s, would I have explained to my colleagues then? And I should say, in case this happens to reach any of them, this is no reflection on any of them or their behaviors. It was a different time. It's the early 2000s. But I don't believe for a second I would have shared it at that point. And that's a consequence of the environment I was working in, where that kind of weakness would have been professionally fatal for a combination of reasons. And I'm acutely aware that not everybody works for an enlightened organization that wants to be at its best when dealing with colleagues with disabilities. And I'm confident there'll be people in the organization I work for who actually are worried about sharing things like this because they believe it'll impede or otherwise hinder their development. And I don't know what to say to them. I'm not sure I would recommend it. It's a difficult personal choice.
It is personal choice.
And for some people, it can be cathartic. It can be helpful. It can be, in some cases, a springboard. It can help with advancement, being able to share of yourself like this. But it's a personal choice to reflect on. Hiding from help that's available is never going to be wise, but sometimes it can be the correct calculation and set of circumstances depending on the person. So I'd make no judgment on anybody who was worried, but equally, I'd point out my experience. They might be amazed by how helpful people can be.
Andrew, we have a tradition in the film series that we're creating to ask the previous interviewee to offer a question that we would offer to the next interviewee. So we spoke to Nathan Warren of Sanctuary Group, and his question to you, and it builds on an answer you gave, which is about your leadership style. So what is it from your experience that you hope you will have or have taken into your leadership style as you go forward?
So I've talked a lot about how fortunate I've been through this entire process. Everything went right when it could go right. I've had every possible accommodation from colleagues, friends, family in terms of support, and my support needs themselves haven't been enormous. And I now move into a phase of my career where I'm working for an organization that's in a really exciting place. We've just been bought by Nationwide Building Society. They've got big plans for what we do. And that creates a degree of career uncertainty for lots of people. And it's just part of life. Change happens. And I have come into this period, I think if I hadn't had such an enormous change to my personal life, it would have been a lot more unsettling. But it's just another different thing that I need to deal with. And looking forward, I'm either going to be in a different role in a different version of the same organization, or in a completely new role in a different organization. And I'm going to have to adapt to working with different people, whether it's as leaders or as people that I need to work alongside and help influence on their journey. And I think what I've learned in all of this is that I've spent 25 years having bad days I didn't know I was having. And I'm now aware and confident in how I can positively improve my lot in life. But nobody would have known from looking that I was unwell. And it could be that the people I'm working with are suffering a different version of the worst day of their lives. And I mean, it's trite, but it's empathy. It's the studied, learned, experiential empathy that I've developed that has grown and I'm going to use, I hope, to make me a better leader. I have never had a role where I didn't feel a little bit of imposter syndrome, going back to the very first paper round I had, that I was always worried I was going to do it wrong. And some element of that is always helpful. And I hope that the little bit of doubt that I've faced in dealing with setbacks and along the way will help me as well to frankly question what I'm doing and listen and understand better what people are experiencing, particularly when things go wrong, because that's where we learn. And hopefully as a consequence, more things will go right along the way. So yeah, that's what I learned.
Wonderful. Very measured. Very wise. Andrew, what question would you like to set for our next interviewee for the next series?
Okay, so I don't know who this is. So I'll be gentle and do one that I think everybody can manage. I have talked a lot about being unwell for an extended period of time, not knowing it was happening. And different choices I could have made 25 years ago would have impacted materially my experience over that period. So in that spirit, and not necessarily in those circumstances, but coming at this as someone that's carried a hidden disability for half a lifetime, what would you, well, I'll say younger self, but it can equally be related to, you know, younger family members or, you know, young friends. What would you tell your younger self to avoid or to do differently?
Wonderful. I will carry that question carefully.
Good luck, whoever it was.
It's wonderful stuff. Andrew Hinstridge, thank you so much for your time, for your insights. Really powerful. I've enjoyed every moment of our conversation.
Thank you.
Disability is a story of talent, joy, creativity, and transformation, just as much as being a story of challenge, struggle, or dramatic change. But we don't always turn up the noise on the millions who live really successful working lives at the same time as managing disability or neurodivergence. They are the norm, not the exception. So if you want to learn more from the millions doing really well at work at the same time as managing disability, go and visit our website, www.purplespace.org, and then zap this film to someone who you think would find the learning of most interest.